Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week, disbarred. Howie brings the case against Mark. Years ago, Howie and Mark were counselors at rival summer camps. When the camps came together for a sports festival at Howie's camp, it was Howie's job to sing a sit-down song to help corral the campers. When they heard the song, Mark's campers sat down. But Mark didn't. Howie called out Mark in song, embarrassing him in front of everyone. Howie and Mark have since become friends, but they say this incident has colored their relationship since. Mark says he shouldn't have been embarrassed by a fellow adult. Howie says he was just helping Mark lead by example. Who's right, who's wrong? Only one can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom and presents an obscure cultural reference.
Just like you would to your Izod shirt, be true to Four Winds now. Bailiff Jesse Thorne, please swear the litigants in.
Howie and Mark, please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God or whatever?
I do.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that he probably went to the bad kids' camp across the lake?
I do too.
Judge Hodgman, you may proceed.
Howie and Mark, you may be seated, or as I have heard it said, sit down, sit on down. Everybody, let's sit down. Sit down, you two, for an immediate summary judgment on one of your favors. Can either of you name the piece of culture I referenced when I entered the courtroom? Howie, let's start with you. What is your guess?
I'm going to guess Wet Hot American Summer.
Wet Hot American Summer, a very, very funny movie about summer camp. If you haven't watched it, everyone watch it and then watch the sequel that came out, what, 20 years later or something, right, Jesse?
Yeah, something like that.
Really funny stuff. Great guess, Howie. Great summer camp themed guess. What about you, Mark?
Boy, I'm really stumped. I'm trying to place Four Winds.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it must be like an 80s camp movie, like Meatballs or something like that.
Just like you would to your Izod shirt, be true to Four Winds now. Meatballs is a good guess. That's a good summer camp movie. I'll put both of those guesses in. Any other guesses? No, because both guesses are wrong. All guesses are wrong. Between the two of you, Mark was the least wrong. because it is a reference to a particular summer camp. But where you got tripped up, and for heaven or whatever's sake, why wouldn't you be? You presumed that I was quoting a piece of popular culture from a movie, when in fact I was actually quoting a camp song. So only people who had ever gone to this camp, this specific camp, Four Winds Camp,
boy,
would know this song. And they are not you, because this is a defunct all-girls camp that used to grace the shores of Walker Pond in Sargentville, Maine. Now, I did not go to this camp either. And neither did either of you, obviously. But one listener of ours, Mary, did. And some time ago, she sent a letter that I will read after the credits, describing her time at Four Winds Camp, as well as her larcenous encounter with the actual bad kids camp across the lake, the rich kids camp, the notorious and incredibly ironically named Robin Hood Camp, which we have discussed before on the program. But now, let's proceed to this case, the case of your two summer camps at feud. Who seeks justice in this fake internet court?
I do, Your Honor.
That would be Howie?
That's right.
Howie, please state the nature of your complaint, or sing it if you will.
Mark and I have known each other for 20 plus years now, and it feels to me like our very first interaction, which he experienced negatively, has remained in the background of all of our subsequent interactions. And so I'm here today to clear it up.
What happened?
It was during a time when I was the song leader at my summer camp, which was a Jewish summer camp in the Laurentian Mountains of Quebec. Mm. And there are a surprising number of Jewish summer camps in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Enough so that every summer, one camp would host a sports festival with all of the other Jewish summer camps in the area, and each camp would send a delegation, and they'd have a day of sports among the campers.
Would this be outside of Montreal?
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's a very big, very historic Jewish population in Montreal.
That's right.
So did your camp have a name, Howie?
My camp was called Why Country Camp.
Why Country Camp? Very existential. Why? Why Country Camp?
That's right.
You'll by the end of the session, you will have an answer. It won't be the same answer as anyone else.
We called it YCC. That was how we normally referred to it, and it's named for the Jewish Community Center in Montreal, because that's where it was based out of.
Got it. So you're having a sports fest, and YCC is hosting the sports fest?
That's right.
And another camp is joining, and that's Mark's camp, correct?
Mark's camp and probably three other camps from the region each sent a delegation.
Got it. And so Mark was visiting in the capacity of a counselor at this other camp. Is that right, Mark?
yes, that's right. I was the program director of the other camp. So the peer is sort of questionable technically. You know, perhaps I was due a little more.
You outranked Howie.
It's immaterial, but probably yes.
I don't know. It sounds pretty material to me.
Sounds like the first thing you brought up, so it must be important.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get the hierarchy clear here.
Where does a song leader stand relative to a program director?
Yeah, exactly. So who stays on the boat longer when it's sinking?
Well, when somebody has to play while it goes down.
Right. Okay, so Mark comes over as a program director of, what is the name of your camp, Mark?
It was called Camp Kinneret.
Camp Kinneret, okay. And how you noticed that Mark doesn't like to sit down and follow the rules when the songmaster's singing?
Well, so for some reason, every camp activity in my experience at a Jewish summer camp ends with singing. Mm-hmm. And so even if you've gathered all of the most athletic campers from the various camps, they will be forced to sing together at the end of the day in some kind of group song.
Sure.
Often for points so that the judges can adjust the scores so that everything is a lot closer than it might have been before
singing,
the end of the day.
Oh, so singing becomes a competition.
That's
to even
right.
out the obvious athletic advantage that, say, Camp Kinneret had over YCC, I'm presuming.
That's right, except mm-hmm. that, as Mark will tell you, in his view, his campers were outmatched at every turn during the sports
okay.
festival.
Gotcha.
Mark's camp was much smaller than my camp, so okay. The delegation that he sent was effectively the entire camp.
I see. Okay, so let's get to the actual complaint. What I understand is, you're wrapping up the day. You, as songmaster in the host camp, Howie, are singing a little song, which we're going to hear in a minute. Don't worry about it. Everyone's going to be excited. And the song is encouraging people to sit down, and Mark isn't sitting down.
That's right. So somehow in that summer, in the weeks leading up to that day, the sit-down song had become that summer's tradition, and it was totally by accident. I was sound checking to make sure the sound equipment worked one day, and I was trying to get everybody seated, and it just slipped out of my mouth. But as sometimes things do in these small communities of people, the campers got very excited about this song, and they would ask for it every time we would get together as a group. And I think part of what was fun about
it... You don't have
it,
to justify singing to me, Howie. I'm pro-singing. you're evading the point of contention here. You're,
yes.
you're giving a lot of background.
Okay. So I didn't know Mark's name, but I knew he was the program director at Camp Kinneret, and I knew he wasn't sitting. So in the context of my sit-down song, I called him out, and I said, Captain Kinneret, sit on down on the ground, or words to that effect.
Yeah, no, we have the song, and we're going to listen to it right now.
Sit on down, everybody let's sit down. Sit down, sit on down, everybody let's sit down. Grab a seat on the floor, or else I'm gonna sing some more. Let's sit down, everybody let's sit down. Take a seat on your butt, then I'm gonna tell you what. You gotta sit on down, everybody let's sit down. Captain Kinneret, sit on down. You sit right down upon the ground. You gotta sit on down. Everybody, let's sit down.
Yeah.
Now, Judge Hodgman, before we continue, we should credit the producer of that recording. legendary ethnomusicologist Alan Lomax.
I'm not sure, Jesse, because I don't think that that's an archival recording. Is it, Howie? That's something that you worked up in your studio today
or yeah.
recently?
Yeah. Yeah, recorded on wax cylinder.
Okay. It was beautiful. But that's not tape from the camp. That's a dramatic recreation of the song that you sang many years ago.
That's right. I don't remember the exact words I used, but this was something I would do regularly when we didn't have visitors. I would call people out by name if they weren't sitting to sit with their campers, because that was the leadership philosophy at the camp.
Sure. No, I mean, every camp has its own sort of vibe and style, and YCC was the camp of musical bullies.
Finally.
Mark, I think in all situations, the man with the acoustic guitar is king.
Especially with a microphone on top of it.
Yeah, you had a PA system. You sent in, along with that song, some evidence, including a photo of you, Howie, really rocking out at YCC camp. This is archival footage, is it not? This is a photo from around this time.
That's right.
Yeah, and we'll share this, obviously, on our show page at MaximumFun.org, as well as our Instagram account, at Judge John Hodgman. On Instagram, I quote, "This is me, Howie, performing song leader duties and displaying my questionable late 90s facial hair. Goatee aside, how could anyone deny that punim?" Howie, you're hot in this photo.
It was a good moment for me.
Mark, wouldn't you agree? Hot.
Yes, look at those guns.
Look at those guns. You've really... Everyone seems to be wearing a white t-shirt in this photo, including the campers or counselors in the background behind you. Was this a theme night, white t-shirt night?
On Friday nights, we all would wear white t-shirt to welcome the Sabbath.
You rolled up your sleeve and we can see your arm.
You rolled up your sleeves to welcome your biceps.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody sits down at the gun show.
But while this is evidence that you submitted, Howie, of your incredible style and song leading charisma, it also is evidence for Mark's contention that you were obviously amplified and yes. had the power of amplification.
That's
when
true.
You called out Mark, Captain Kinneret, sit on down. Captain Kinneret's a pretty cool name, Mark. Is that something that you went by, or is that just an improvisation on Howie's part?
No, that's not something I went by. It was definitely an improvisation on Howie's part, and was obviously intended as a bit of a slight.
It's a bit of a slight.
Yeah, okay. Objection, Your Honor.
I'll allow it. What's your objection?
I don't think Mark can know my intention. He may argue that was my intention, but really, my intention was to lovingly, jokingly, ask him to sit, so that we could proceed in the way that we were accustomed to at the host camp.
Right. Because here at YCC, when I'm singing, you sit down.
Well.
Yes. Or I'm going to roast you musically.
More that it's my job to get everybody seated. And this was the way that had worked all summer. So to me, I was just.
Had you roasted anyone else in this way?
Yes, it was a common...
Fellow counselors or
yes.
campers? Fellow counselors as well?
I would only roast the counselors. I wouldn't roast the campers.
Oh, okay.
And all of the counselors understood that it was meant as a loving joke and reminder that this is what's expected of them when we're trying to get
Yeah, but I need not point out to you, song leader Howie, that Captain Kinneret was a guest from a far-off land.
That's right.
Mark, how far away is Kinneret Camp?
Well, there's two types of far away. There's the distance.
Why are all these summer camps in Montreal existential?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning, like, I would say perhaps Mary and I would see really eye to eye in some ways. And so, yeah, they weren't far away from each other in terms of a drive. It was about 45 minutes or something like that.
Okay.
But they were far away from each other in that...
In their spirit.
And size. And, like, you know, camps like Howie's hosted the sports festival. Our camp couldn't host the sports festival because, like, there was basically like a road running through our sports field, and we didn't really have, you know, those types of facilities or that kind of space to host a camp like that.
So you were the one who brought up meatballs in the meatball scenario. Your camp is the small rickety underdog camp, and YCC is the rich kids camp, the Robin Hood camp across the lake, the ones that have the matching tracksuits, and they travel around Maine in a luxury bus. And so forth. That's Camp Robin.
Wearing Hood, white t-shirts and shaming counselors across the state. In this case, province.
You know, we didn't have a budget for a song leader or a PA system for that matter. So you know, it was all feeling foreign. And so that basically what the other camps would do to prepare for the sports festivals, they would have tryouts where their best athletes would try to make the teams that would compete in the sports festival. We didn't have tryouts because we didn't really even have enough kids, you know, for all the teams. And so that year, basically, if you were that age, you played on that team. And so that year, I advocated to try something different, which was instead of taking, you know, the majority of the camp to the sports festival, we'll just take everybody because nobody's trying out anyway. So we're going to take the entire camp to the sports festival. And so it was a bit of a conversation with the director to convince him that that was reasonable and that I'd be able to keep track of everybody,
right?
And that it wouldn't get chaotic and you know all that kind of stuff. And so. That was weighing sort of heavily on me, I guess, as we were arriving in the sit-down situation.
Tell me how you felt in that moment when you realized you were being sung about by Howie.
In that exact moment, it was humiliating. Humiliation, right? An embarrassment. I was trying to set an example for my kids who were intimidated. And they're discovering things at this camp that we would never, you know, indoor basketball and all these things. Right? And they're all sitting there.
Indoor basketball?
Discovering indoor basketball?
No.
They thought it was chutzpah when Columbus suggested he discovered America. But
what I'm trying to get
for
at.
For your kids to have discovered indoor basketball.
This is a level of facilities
that we were
just not familiar with. And so they're all walking in nervous because they're about to have their...
What's that? Hey, Mr. Mark, what's that? It's like, oh, that's a swimming pool that's full of water, not rocks.
That's right. This is a rollerblading hockey rink. And they have instructors to show you, you know, those types of things.
Wow.
And
so, Howie... Did your camp have a rollerblading hockey rink?
We had a paved asphalt hockey rink. It was not really well suited to rollerblading because it didn't get repaved that often. So we mostly played ball hockey in the hockey rink.
You have to understand. I mean, I know that I felt the same way, Jesse, but then I remembered this is Canada. There's got to be some form of hockey.
Got it.
But they had fancier facilities. You were feeling like a real country mouse at Y Country Camp.
Mm-hmm. And I was feeling that same thing from the kids who are all wide-eyed and they're ushered into this giant, you know, rec hall with more, you know.
Now, did they have white t-shirts too or were they just dressed in rags?
That's right. No, we sprung for fresh camp t-shirts, you know, because we had to represent because I had sold this thing to the director as this is going to be, it's going to be great. It's going to be a bonding thing. It's going to be a character building experience. We're going to go there. We're going to be proud of who we are. We're going to show our spirit. Right. And I'm seeing the kids now, you know, eyes like saucers,
right.
You know, looking around, knowing that they're all about to get their asses handed to them. Their butts handed to them, you know, in whatever sport, you know, they're about to play. They're feeling overmatched. They're feeling intimidated. And so I'm standing up and I'm trying to catch their eyes. And I'm trying also to make sure that I don't lose any of them and you know, make sure that I have a count of them. But I'm trying to catch their eyes and, you know, roll my eyes or you know, show them like, this is no big deal. Don't worry about this, guys. It's nothing. And then so as I'm doing this, you know, imagine I am, you know, I've caught the eyes of one of the of one of the Nukem Ball players, right? And right, and what I'm doing is trying to show, yeah, you got nothing to worry about. Yes, they got tons of people. Sure, there's 500 people here. Yeah, this is, you know, this is no big deal. We got it, right? And I'm trying to, you know, make that connection.
Captain, you know, can hear it. Sit on down. Captain, right. Can hear it. Sit on down. Hey, you big dummy, sit on down. We're going to whoop your butts in Nukem Ball. That's how it felt.
Exactly. Right. So now the looks of the faces of the kids are mouths covered. Oh, my God. Mouths agape. Did that just happen? And I was I kind of like wheeled around and like. Looking at this girl, you could see obviously what Howie looked like at the time. Yeah. And
hot as hell.
Right? Hot as hell in an amplified way.
Yeah.
And I was just like, how is this possibly happening right now? I guess the other
not
part
even,
of the context
not is, even how is it hot, how is this happening? How is it happening?
Howie, is it happening? Who does that?
Who
from the
is
stage,
Howie? Right.
From the stage.
Because you guys didn't know each other at the time.
We knew
I
of
only
each other.
Knew Howie. That's right. I knew Howie a bit. I knew of Howie because
the long bubbling rivalry of the Laurentian Mountains. Howie v. Mark.
That's right. Howie, we went to college together. We both went to McGill, University of Montreal. And I knew Howie in a kind of like a bit of a removed way. He played in a band, you know, that I would see sometimes, you know, at the famous Yellow Door coffee house. And so I guess that added, you know, to my level of, I don't know, prejudgment of who I thought, you know, he was. Like,
you mean to say he was like a rock star.
Exactly. Has a very high opinion of himself and his talents.
And Howie, what was the name of your band?
The name of the band at the time was Bear Left.
Bear Left, I like it.
Right Frog.
Wowie Zowie.
Howie Zowie.
Howie Zowie. It's true.
Let's take a quick recess and hear about this week's Judge John Hodgman sponsor. We'll be back in just a moment on the Judge John Hodgman podcast. You're listening to Judge John Hodgman. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. Of course, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, always brought to you by you, the members of MaximumFun.org. Thanks to everybody who's gone to MaximumFun.org/join. And you can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Stitch Fix.
You know that boost of confidence you get when you put on an outfit that just feels good? You know what that's like. That's what I get when I use Stitch Fix. With Stitch Fix, you get a human stylist, not AI. A human being who understands your style, size, and budget. They do all the shopping for you, and it's the easiest way to update your wardrobe this season or any other.
This professional stylist picks the clothes. They can either send you a box where anything you don't want is unbelievably easy to return, or they can make a little storefront for you just from stuff that they recommend for your taste and your body. It is an absolutely incredible service. They give you styling advice, outfit recommendations, the whole thing soup to nuts. And like I said, if you don't want it, if you don't like it, it is unfathomably easy to send it back. They give you an envelope that's big enough that has the postage and the labels on it. All you have to do is shove the thing in there, close it up, and drop it off at your local mailing center. It is that easy.
Can I also say the stuff that my stylist at Stitch Fix picks for me, I really like it. Like, they know me, and it's really terrific. Plus, if you've got small people in your life, sadly, my small people are now adults shopping for themselves. But if you've got little kids, it's a terrific way to get togs for your kids. Style that makes you feel as you want to look. Get started today at stitchfix.com/JJHO. That's stitchfix.com/JJHO. stitchfix.com/JJHO.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Aura Frames.
Hey, Mother's Day is coming up. Do you have a mom in your life that you'd like to celebrate? There are very few better ways than giving an Aura frame to someone you care about. These are beautifully Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos of your memories with your mom, stepmom, a mentor, friend, whatever it is in your life who might enjoy seeing photos from your life. Aura frames are the way to go.
Judge, there's a very special mom in my life, Ms. Teresa Thorne.
Yes.
That's my wife and also a whole human being in her own right. Guess what's on her bedside table? Yes, that's right. You guessed it in one, an Aura frame. What I love about the Aura frame is you don't have to load a bunch of stuff onto an SD card or whatever, like with the old digital frames. It is so easy to get the pictures on there. So like when Teresa texts me a cute picture of one of our children or our dog, or one of our siblings texts us a cute picture of one of them or one of their children, all I have to do is hit that share button on my phone and I can share it right to the frame and then it lives there for as long as I want. I can also take it off whenever I want, but I don't even have to open the Aura Frames app, which is a great app, but I don't even have to go there. It just goes straight into wherever I want it, whichever frame I want, or I have multiple Aura Frames in my house or all of them. It is incredibly easy. That's why Wirecutter chose it as the best digital photo frame. That's why it's one of Oprah's favorite things. It is guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame.
That's A-U-R-A Frames.com. Use the code Hodgman at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
So Howie was kind of a rock star to you when he calls you out from the stage. And was there a stage, Howie? Was there a stage?
It's possible.
Mark is nodding.
It's possible there was a stage. My memory is that this was outside, and there wasn't a stage, but it's possible. So the indoor basketball courts that Mark is talking about.
Brag about this indoor basketball.
It's like, it's possible there was a stage. I remember we were at the Grand Coliseum.
Because it was something of an amphitheater. And
I was in the green room at the time. I can't recall.
Yeah. I don't know whether that was before we had the new lighting rig put in or not.
I remember the night before Stevie Nicks had asked to perform in the round.
Yeah, it was a revolving. Was that when we had the revolving stage or the stage within the stage? Yeah, right. Your memory is hazy. I'll defer to Mark. Mark, was there a stage? Yes or no?
There was a stage. Yes.
Yeah.
Howie was in an elevated position.
That's right. Playing guitar, also known as an axe. And as they say, the tree remembers, the axe forgets. If Mark remembers being humiliated by a guy named Howie on stage, I believe him. So did the kid, you say the kids covered their mouths, Mark. Were they laughing at you or were they just astonished?
They were astonished. They weren't laughing at me, but they were maybe embarrassed for me.
But they were sitting down.
They were sitting down, of course. All the kids sit down.
What happened after Captain Kinnear at Sit On Down was issued from the microphone? Did you sit down then?
Yeah. I mean, I'm faced with the choice. Right? I could have continued to stand in protest and risk another perhaps escalated, shout out from the stage.
Well, why were people sitting down in the first place, Howie? What was going to happen?
This was going to be this was going to be the musical presentation portion. And so we were trying to get all of the attendees seated so that each delegation could come to the stage.
Right.
And share their song.
Got it. And they were sitting in was it an amphitheater or was it were they sitting on logs or were they sitting on,
If it's as Mark remembers, they were sitting on the floor of the basketball court.
Oh, what kind of basketball court was it? Like, could you see the stars or no?
No.
Like, if it rained, what would happen in the basketball court? Would you get wet?
No, it was an indoor basketball court.
Oh, indoor. Wow. I forgot about that detail. Pretty fancy. Did you express your frustration to Howie after this happened?
We have never really talked about it like this until today. I don't think I ever owned up to having actually been embarrassed about it. It's something that was I just sort of at first passive aggressively dealt with, and then we swept it under the rug.
But you're friends now, right? Yes or no?
Yes.
How did you become friends after Howie humiliated you in this way?
Well, Howie was friendly with a lot of the people that I was friendly with.
Okay.
And our paths would, you know, continue to cross and continue to cross. He actually was roommates following that summer. He was roommates with a friend of ours, somebody who one of my roommates was also in a band with. And so, you know, we found ourselves spending time there. And, you know, the edge sort of began to wear off a little bit. And then there was this kind of moment, I guess. I found myself over there. And
over there at camp now? Or are we talking?
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Over at Howie and Zach's apartment.
Okay. A bunch we can of people.
Yeah. Zach will, you know, he'll be fine. You know, a bunch of people connect with us. We're all sort of over there. And
You're all hanging around in Montreal, or where are you living?
That's
at
right.
This point?
Okay, we're in Montreal.
So you're all in the Yellow Door scene, friends of friends. Your age is like what, early 20s at this point.
Yeah,
you're not doing the camp thing anymore. Maybe you are, but it's adult life now, and you're over at Zach's.
You're drinking beers, you're playing roller hockey, you're eating bagels, you're making out with Yuppie. Yeah. just Montreal, difference. Young adult Montreal
just
stuff.
Just young adult Everybody's Montreal made that stuff. Mistake. Yeah, just a classic fete of some kind, a house fete.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because Zach's got the cool apartment or whatever, and there's Howie across the room. And tell me what happened.
Right. So Zach and Howie were sharing this apartment. They live in this apartment. And I can't remember exactly what the details were, but it, you know, in Montreal, in what was affectionately at that time known as the student ghetto, you know, there was some kind of sketchy landlord, you know, behavior or whatever. So there was an appliance. It was like a fridge or the freezer stopped working. And instead of fixing it, the landlord just left it there and then like brought in like a chest freezer, basically, mm-hmm. into this little apartment to be like, no, you still have a freezer. And then so Zach and Howie started using the surface of this freezer, you know, with a whiteboard marker to record the results of this contest that Howie would run for people, which was...
is this the Premium Plus Challenge?
It is.
Oh.
Is it appropriate to continue into the... A Premium Plus
I
challenge.
Insist.
No, I've been told to be on alert for any mention of the Premium Plus Challenge, so I'm very curious to know what it is.
Premium Plus was a brand of saltine crackers. I think they have them in the U.S., yes. but they're not but called
we
Plus.
We just call them Premium.
Ah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Montreal, it would have been Plus.
Premium Plus. Okay.
And so, you know, the contest was simple. How quickly can a person eat 10 Premium Plus saltine crackers? And then, you know, you would be timed, and then your score and name would be immortalized in a whiteboard marker on the side of this freezer.
So, yes, this is a classic young dudes in their 20s hanging around with each other, don't want to talk about feelings of or past recrimination, instead of just going to shove their mouths full of saltines, and that's how they bond.
Kind of. You know, there was a lot of people, mixed company, and Howie introduces the game or the contest, and he's, you know, he's cleverly talking about it and offering, you know, tips for new people on how you might be able to come close to his record with his name in big letters at the top.
Howie was not only killing it at the Yellow Door, he was also killing it at Premium Plus.
What I'm hearing is that Howie was not only an acoustic guitar bully, he was also a saltine bully.
Yeah, you might say, look, you know, I didn't necessarily feel bullied, but it was triggering. It had the familiar hallmarks of what had transpired, you know, a summer ago.
Let's pause for a second. So this is like a year later is what you're saying that this mm-hmm. happened. Let me go back a year then, Howie, to that fateful evening in the indoor basketball court. You said that when you Sang told Mark to sit down, you didn't know his name, so you sang Captain Kinnearet. Whereas Mark says from the floor of the indoor basketball court that he already knew you from the Montreal music scene. From Mark's point of view, there's a power differential there. Did you really not know at all who Mark was?
I knew who he was, but I didn't know his name. I knew he mm-hmm. was a friend of a friend, but we hadn't yet been introduced.
Right.
Now, I also felt the power differential. So Mark said earlier that he was a program director at his camp, and mm-hmm. I was unaware of the relative size of his camp. I hadn't yet visited it.
Right.
And when Mark got off the bus from Camp Kinnearet, he was carrying a walkie-talkie, a clipboard.
Wow.
And a set of keys.
Those are some pretty big power signifiers, Mark.
In the summer camp universe, there is no more powerful trio of right. symbols. So to my mind, Mark, who was my age or seemed about my age, but had attained this high rank of program director in some yeah. speedy fashion,
yeah.
he wasn't sitting down because he didn't feel like he had to sit down. He was too good to sit down.
That was your read on Mark.
That was my read of the situation. And from my perspective, I have a job to do, which is to get everybody who's in this beautiful indoor basketball court sitting on the dirty basketball floor. And the way that I do that, instead of yelling at them, is singing at them.
Yeah, you gently nudge them down with song. I understand. But now that you know Mark, is your assessment of him as a high status walkie-talkie carrying power figure the same or different?
No, it's different.
How would you describe your friend Mark?
I would describe Mark as a kind, generous, and funny friend.
Mark, when did you reveal that you still had feelings about being told to sit down?
I think it was, when I actually verbalized it, it was actually at Howie's bachelor party.
Oh, really? Right?
Like, so that's probably even, 10 years even after that fact, where I actually said, I think I sort of half-jokingly said, you know, you were my nemesis for a long time, and I'm happy to, you know, be standing here with you. And so that was the first time that I had ever outwardly, you know, mentioned that, you know, I had been thinking about it or have continued to think about it.
So you had become close enough friends via the Premium Plus Challenge, which we'll talk about in a second, that you'd be invited to his bachelor party roughly a decade later. And now here it is. How long has it been since you went to that bachelor party, Howie? Roughly speaking.
About 15 years.
About 15 years. So when Mark said to you, I feel, you know, you were my nemesis, you told me to sit down and made me feel bad. How did you feel at your bachelor party?
Well, I said, you know, I have still carried around the time that you destroyed my record in the Premium Plus Challenge, and I still feel a little bit ashamed about that.
Oh, turnabout was fair play. So now, in the saga of Mark and Howie, we roll back another 9 years or so to Zach's apartment when Howie is describing the Premium Plus Challenge. He was given some tips because he was the Premium Plus Challenge champ. How many Premium Plus saltines were you able to eat, Howie? What was the record?
Well, it was, you had to eat 10 crackers as fast as possible.
As quickly as possible. Okay, so what was your time record?
I feel like it was like a minute and a half.
A minute and a half. And what were your tips that you were bragging on when you were introducing these noobs to this incredible Zach's kitchen game?
I think it was, you know, don't take it slow because your mouth is going to dry up. So you got to get as much in as you can right away.
And so what would that mean? Like you preload five?
You just don't take a break between crackers. Like, don't.
Do you have to eat them one at a time, or can you do like 2, 4, 6, 8?
Yeah, I think there were no rules beyond you have to eat 10.
Okay, 10, and so it was in a minute and change, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, maybe 90 seconds.
All right. And then Mark stood up and said, I shall take the challenge.
Yeah, and he did it in like 26 seconds. It was not close.
Mark, do you remember that time when you ate all those crackers in 26 seconds?
Sort of, because I feel like I kind of blacked out when I was doing it. I felt I'm not competitive, like at all, but right. I just felt like I saw red basically, and I was, I'm going to destroy this guy. I don't know. I didn't even think about it. I just decided that I was, my name was going to be on the fridge.
You hadn't been training for the Premium Plus Challenge or anything. You had no background in fast cracker eating. It was just a moment where you saw Howie again. You felt that wound from Camp YCC, and you're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this guy now.
Not so much in a vindictive way, but I basically said, you know, who's Captain Kinneret now? he eats these crackers.
Obviously you became friends after that, such that a decade later you'd be at his bachelor party, correct?
Yes. And he was incredibly gracious about having, you know, been destroyed in the challenge. He shook my hand and congratulated mm-hmm. me and said how amazing, you know, how he couldn't believe the time. And, you know, it sort of, I saw a side of him, which was, you know, he was happy to put somebody else on the stage or the spotlight. And so I felt a warmth from him that I hadn't. And I guess now we had a shared thing. Because we were both very good Premium Plus eaters, and we were both former champions. We had never really had a shared thing before, other than being humiliated.
It evened the polished indoor basketball playing surface
in a matter of speaking.
Yeah, it set the stage for a stage that you could share and be friends at that point. Okay, so. Why were you still dwelling on it 9 years later? Why are we still talking about it today, Mark? I mean, it seems like, why didn't eating 10 saltines as quickly as possible heal your wound?
Do you know sometimes when, let's say you're going to sleep, you're going to bed and you close your eyes, sometimes, right, it flashes into your mind something really embarrassing that you've done, or a moment that you have that just makes you cringe. And so, like, that's a thing. I have that, right? You know, being called out in front of 500 people and then, you know, meekly having to, you know, decide, should I protest this or make a scene about it, or do I sit down? So all these kids looking at me as an example, and then I, you know, have to prostrate myself in front of the rock star and sit down.
Do you think that I can give you what you want? If the saltines and the bachelor party conversation and the 25 years of friendship hasn't been able to heal this wound, how can I help?
Well, I think Howie really, truly, in a genuine way, believes that he was right. He was right to do that, and that was right. And so we've never addressed or talked about how that was actually super embarrassing. And so that's where I feel like the judgment is important. Like, what was it in fact?
But there's a cultural thing here, Mark, because you're both Canadian, right?
Yeah.
By birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Mark, you should know how difficult it is for a Canadian to say sorry. It's the hardest thing. It's just, from birth, they are trained, never say sorry. That's never, right. Ever say sorry. Howie, you're hearing what Mark is saying. Do you still think you were right? And even if you do think you were right in the moment, now that he's explained his feelings, why not say sorry?
I'm happy to say sorry. And I accept that his feelings are real and legitimate. And I can understand now that he's told the story in this way, why he might have had those feelings. But what sits with me is that he still thinks that I intended to humiliate him, that it was my goal to make him feel that way.
Uh-huh.
When it wasn't. And I feel like that characterization of you know, who I am and who I was being in that moment has made it so that I don't think he can fully trust me, and he and I can't fully trust him, because we still have this thing, this, you know, this pebble in the shoe of our friendship.
And Mark, do you maintain that you think that Howie set out to humiliate you? That it wasn't a misunderstanding?
I don't think it was a misunderstanding. I don't think he set out to, like, you know, grievously humiliate me. But the aim of it was to sort of, right, you are naming someone in front of the whole group and essentially shaming them to comply with the rest of what the rest of the group is doing. So, right there, I don't know how else you would describe that.
Was there a rivalry between the two camps such that you could presume sort of aggression, good-hearted or not?
I mean, yeah, we were literally rolling in so that we could participate in a sports festival against each other.
Right. So you felt like there, by definition, there had to be a little bit of knife twisting, even if totally. It was good-natured and not meant to truly harm, but like... Exactly. You're the opposition in that case.
That's right. Competitive edge. And despite seeing my walkie-talkie and my clipboard, he still saw fit to call me out in front of the group, which was not a small group. That's a 500 or 600 people. And so yes, I maintain that.
Did anyone refer to you as Captain Kinnearit after that?
I squashed that pretty quickly.
So people did. So the answer is yes.
On the bus ride home, some of the kids were trying that out.
It's a very catchy tune. Captain Kinnearit, sit on down. Captain Kinnearit, sit on down. How do you feel when I sing it? Captain Kinnearit, sit on down. How do you feel when I roast you?
To be honest, when you played it earlier in the show,
yeah,
I haven't heard that song since the day. But when you played it earlier in the show, I knew every word of it. I sang it in my head along, so it's with me.
It's with you. Howie, you covered your mouth when Mark revealed that he had not heard it since then, and it's still, and he remembers every word. Were you covering your mouth to yawn because, this boring dude, or were you stifling a different emotion?
I think I had a set of mixed emotions. The first is, a bit of shame on my part that I've wounded my friend so badly, but also a bit of pride on my part that as a songwriter, I wrote a song that's still in his head 20 years later.
Oh, it's a very catchy tune.
You're saying you're proud that your bullying is living in his head rent free.
Mark, it says here that if I were to rule in your favor, you would like me to compel Howie to acknowledge that you were leading by example, that you did not deserve or need to be singled out and embarrassed musically in front of 500 kids. And though he has not used those precise words, it does sound like he acknowledges now that he realizes that he hurt your feelings. Is that not sufficient?
Yeah, I suppose it's sufficient. I think it just, I don't know. It seems like when, after you've done something, you should own it.
But by contrast, Howie, in his request for a ruling, wants me to order every member of your friend group to call you Captain Kinnearit once per year in the group chat in the name of quote-unquote humility. So he's asking for something pretty specific if I were to find in his favor. So is there, if I were to find in your favor and adjudicate that you were harmed, is there some concrete damages that I could award you?
Perhaps via that same group chat and that same friend group, Howie could issue a sincere apology instead of trying to get people to continue to do what he did in the first place.
Howie, when you ask that I order every member of the friend group to call Mark Captain Kinneret once per year in the, quote, name of humility, end quote, Mark seems pretty humble. Do you mean in the name of humility or in the name of rehumiliation?
I guess what I meant was I would like him now, all these years later, to recognize the spirit in which the song was intended, not as bullying, but as just a gentle, hey, we're all friends here. We can all laugh together at ourselves.
I see. Okay, I think I've heard everything I need to. I am going to go sneak into the tuck shop of my chambers and eat a lot of whatchamacallit bars and have some bug juice. And I'll be back in a moment with my verdict.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Mark, how are you feeling about your chances?
Truthfully, pretty good. I think you could see where the judge was naturally leaning when he asked about humility versus rehumiliation.
Howie, how do you feel?
You know, I've never been called a bully before, so I'm feeling a little put in my place.
We'll see what Judge Hodgman has to say about all this when we come back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class, tomorrow's exam will cover the extinction and de-extinction of the dodo, PowerPoint as an art form, and the history of Eurovision. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything, where we learn about science and a bit of everything else.
My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
The Van Freaks Road Show is about to get in gear.
Hey, how many gears does a Mitsubishi Delica Japanese market only adventure van have? Six? Five?
I'm gonna put it up to eight. Why not eight?
Yeah, eight. Probably they probably have some extra gears.
I've only ever driven a Subaru Sambar, which is what I have. But I'm imagining myself, I've got my left hand on the gear knob right now. It's a right-hand drive vehicle.
Yep.
And I'm putting the Delica up to eight because we're cruising on the freeway to Belfast, Northern Ireland. Right.
We're taking that transatlantic freeway straight to Belfast, Northern Ireland, and following up with Dublin, Edinburgh, London, Copenhagen, then back over to the United States for a whole bunch of wonderful cities in the United States, some of which we've been to before, like Chicago and St. Paul, Austin, Texas. Some we've never been to, like Lexington, Kentucky, and Charlottesville, Virginia, plus our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and of course, the State Theater here in Portland, Maine, as well as, of course, our triumphant return to my hometown, sort of Boston, Massachusetts, at the Wilbur Theater, and our double triumphant return to Brooklyn at the Murmur Opera House, where not only will we be performing live for you, but also live streaming the show to the entire world. We love Antiques Roadshow. We love Mitsubishi Delica vans. We love shows. We love the road. We love you. We want to see you in all of these places and online. You can get all the details at
VanFreaksRoadshow.com. We have registered the domain.
VanFreaksRoadshow.com for all your tickets and your information. Go there now. You can also submit cases for all these places. We do need cases and places. MaximumFun.org/JJHO. You'll find the link there over at Van Freaks Roadshow as well. Let us know if you're in any of these cities and you've got a dispute with anybody. We might hear your case live on stage. And finally, justice will be yours. VanFreaksRoadshow.com. Tickets are going. Why don't you go get them?
Let's get back to the case. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom and presents his verdict.
I think for 2 summers, I did go to Camp Burgess in Cape Cod for 2 weeks. One time with Damon, one time I think with John Wolfe. Maybe both times with Damon. Anyway, with my friends. And I did not see the point, and I did not like it. I did not care for it. I saw through that pretty quickly, that this is a kind of constant low-level trauma. No one ever bullied me. I'm just talking about like having to shower in public. No thank you. For an only child, this was the worst.
Wait, the showers at your summer camp were public?
Well, I mean, there were stalls. Do you know what I mean?
Down at the town square?
You had to walk through the woods. You had to walk through the woods in flip-flops and a towel.
Wow.
This was not for a sensitive child of Brookline, Massachusetts. And I'm talking about, you know, Brookline is suburban, but it ain't the woods. And, you know, tests of strength and physical conflict. The only thing that I... We had a tick problem in our camp, too. There was just... Nature was just constantly trying to crawl up and into you. So when we did our Capture the Flag event, our team was called the Ticks, the Fighting Ticks. That was my idea. That was my one happy memory. What I remember a lot was... What I remember a lot was spending, you know, nights... listening to the other kids in my bunk just like cry themselves to sleep because they were so homesick. And I was too. No number of Bloom County comic strips can ease the homesickness of an only child. And yet, for all of this, we sent our kids to a classic summer camp too. And I understand that people have a lot of fondness for camp that goes beyond mere Stockholm syndrome. Because I know that our daughter loved her experience at that camp and went on to become a counselor in training. She really lived it up. Whereas our son sent home a letter, which was, I mean, truly magnificent in taking the pain and homesickness he was feeling and forging it into a weapon to hurt us. Insofar as he wrote us a letter saying, "Camp is fine. I have 2 friends. Their names are Clown and Opera. Those aren't real people. Those are the knots in the pine wood ceiling above my bunk that I talk to at night because I have no actual friends. Signed, your son."
Boy.
I mean,
hello,
I'm...
Hello, mother. Hello, father.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was like, I don't know that he's ever going to forgive us for going to that camp the second time. We're like, you came to like it at the end. He's like, no, I didn't. Well, you know, people have different experiences. There is something about summer camp and the collision of people at those ages, right? Ages like, let's say... you know, 8 to 12 or even 15 for campers and then like 16 to 18 or 19 for counselors, like two groups that are at very, very big emotional moments of transition and change in their lives. And those collisions can be very memorable and very, very fun and yet also traumatic, or at least, let's say, memorable in a less fun way, right? And in particular, you know, when you have kids in charge of other kids, you know, counselors in charge who are themselves children in charge of children, the understanding of the roles of authority and the responsibilities of authority, it gets very blurry. Now, I believe that Howie did not understand that Mark felt so vulnerable already. And I believe Howie, when he says, I saw the walkie-talkie, I saw the clipboard, I saw the signifiers of authority and I saw the title. And I felt here was a figure of authority. And who am I, if not a goateed bard? A jester, if you will, whose job, nay, responsibility, is to upset authority at every turn, if possible, and speak truth to the king. King Captain Kinneret, sit on down. 'Tis I, Howie the Bard. And plus, I mean, Howie is a natural performer and rock star. He played at the Yellow Door. As a musician and as a performer, and I can say this because I am also the same, Howie probably had difficulty understanding that people in the audience are human beings, that he is not the main character of the universe, that people have feelings besides him, including Mark. You know, when we are on stage, it is power. You know, even though Howie misunderstood the power differential and thought he was kind of, you know, thumbing his nose at the man to some degree, still he was on stage and he was amplified. And that's a power that you have to wield responsibly. When you do crowd work in comedy or whatever, you have to be careful that you are roasting responsibly the people in the audience and that they're enjoying it. And I think that, you know, despite the fact that Howie, I think in good faith, thought that he was just poking at another counselor, the truth is that he made an error of judgment. He didn't appreciate that being on stage gave him a visibility and a kind of power of his own that necessarily made it a little bit more of a punch down than a punch up. Equally so, I think Howie, and this is a perfectly reasonable error of judgment. Like, I'm not saying that Howie's a bad person. Like, Howie, how old were you at this time?
21, 22.
Oh, you should have known better. Never mind. But I would say it's perfectly reasonable even then, because you're just still, your brain's still developing, and you don't know all of the context of what's going on here. And, you know, roasting and teasing fellow counselors within your own camp environment, your own camp ecosystem of light hazing and torture, where to push and where not to push. You know how far to poke until you hit bone. But because this was a guest from a far off land, you didn't necessarily know what their conventions were, right? I don't think you intended to hurt him. And I'm going to say something, Mark, that you might not like. If I were in your shoes and someone called me Captain Kinneret and they were roasting me from the stage, I'd be so happy. I remember the first time I ever saw the video on Yo MTV Raps of Hammer's They Put Me in the Mix. And that's the one that goes, Hammer, Hammer, I am Hammer. And then he goes, They Put Me in the Mix. Like, yeah, dude, you're in the song. You're the one. Of course they put you in the mix. It's still thrilling for Hammer to hear his own name. But, you know, that's because Howie and I are emotionally stunted performers who want recognition at all times. Howie didn't know that you weren't going to be flattered by the fact that you got this cool name, Captain Kinneret, which really sounds like a cool Elton John album, actually. Like, I think that you have to acknowledge that Howie acted in good faith, given the information that he had and given the level of judgment that he had. One thing that Howie has not said in this conversation, he said, I would be happy to say sorry, but I haven't heard him say sorry. You know what I'm saying? So, looking back at your ideal rulings for a moment, I'm definitely not going to order your entire friend group to continue to rehaze Mark by calling him Captain Kinneret once a year in the group chat in the name of humility. Mark is plenty humble. So I am going to rule in Mark's favor in this case, even though I feel that what you did, Howie, was not that bad, right? That you did it with good intentions and in a way that if Mark had been a more extroverted person who liked to get some attention thrown at him, you might have even enjoyed. But in this case, your little barb went awry and it lodged in his heart and it's still working its way out. you're asking to be taken at face value. Take at face value what Mark has told you, that he was not standing to flout your authority. He was trying to be empathetic towards his kids. And your little song dart was misguided and hit him too hard. I think I do order you to acknowledge that he was, in fact, leading by example. Do you acknowledge that?
I do.
So acknowledged. And I do order you to say, I'm sorry, but in a song. So, producer Jennifer Marmer, how long do we have until this podcast hits the air? Just under a month, Howie. So, yeah, so Howie, just write the song in whatever, you know, mode or tone you want it to be. Keep it about 30 seconds and send it to us, and we'll play it next week. This is the sound of a gavel.
Sit down, sit on down, everybody let's sit down.
Judge John Hodgman rules, that is all.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Mark, how do you feel?
I can't wait. I can't wait. Howie, I hope you get some other musicians in on it. Make it big.
Howie, how do you feel?
I feel good. I feel like I've got a project now, and I can channel my regret into music, and hopefully going forward, Mark and I will have smoother seas to sail.
Howie, Mark, thanks for joining us on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another Judge John Hodgman case is in the books. We'll have Swift Justice in just a second. Our thanks to Redditor Mutant Friend for naming this week's episode Disbarred.
Disbarred, because it was a bard who dissed that guy.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
We're asking for those names at MaximumFun.reddit.com, where you can also sneak a peek at upcoming topics of Judge John Hodgman cases. It's a sneaky move.
You can sneaky.
Go sneak on over there.
No one ever goes to Reddit to not be sneaky.
Instagram.com/JudgeJohnHodgman is where you can see this picture of the world's most / least rockingest man ripping out a sweet acoustic guitar solo at summer camp. Really looking like Coop from Wet Hot American Summer, Michael Showalter's character.
Yeah, absolutely. Here, I got a music bed for the rest of the credits. Go ahead.
Judge John Hodgman, created by Jesse Thorne and John Hodgman. This episode engineered by Max Jewer at Clutch Sound in Madison, Wisconsin. Marie Barty runs our social media. Our producer is Jennifer Marmer. Now, Swift Justice. Redditor Medved801 says, my husband drinks my drinks if I don't finish them within 30 minutes. He claims, after 30 minutes, I've given up my right of exclusivity to my drink, and it is up for grabs.
I mean, you can't steal someone's drink, because then they're only having half a drink. And we all know a body needs two drinks, right, Jesse?
Body needs two drinks. It's true.
That's science.
It's science.
Don't steal people's drinks. So that settles that. But now we need some new disputes. How about stranger disputes? You know, when Howie and Mark met, when this all happened, they didn't know each other. This is a grudge that Mark was holding against a stranger until he wandered into Zach's kitchen and saw a chance to redeem himself with the saltine challenge. Maybe you've gotten into a dispute with a stranger, arguments you've had at the airport with a stranger, in the subway, or online. You remember that person who was going too slow in the passing lane? And you couldn't pass those cars because they wouldn't get over? Or remember that person at the grocery store who had 16 items in the 15 item or less line? Remember those teens who guilted your son into switching seats on the airplane such that he had to give up his nice window seat for a middle seat 3 rows back? Oh, those teens. What did you do about it? Seethe like I did? Or did you get justice? Probably you didn't get justice. It's hard to get justice against strangers in this world, but I will give it to you. If you have a dispute against a stranger who cannot speak for themselves, send it in to us at MaximumFun.org/JJHO, and Jesse and I will resolve it for you and probably find in your favor. But we're also looking for all disputes, right, Jesse?
all disputes, and especially disputes in places where we are headed out on tour. So if you are in one of those places, make sure to let us know when you go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. We'll talk to you next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Everybody, let's sit down. Boom. Hey, it's a completely unsurprising and totally promised post-credits sequence where I'm going to read that letter from Mary that I alluded to in the cultural reference. So you may recall Camp Robin Hood in Maine, the, let's say, over-resourced camp offering golf and tennis and squash programs, along with its, per its website, 95 years of traditional values. A few months ago, listener Rachel wrote in about being a counselor there, and I read her letter online, and she revealed the instructions that some campers were allowed to ignore all camp rules and do whatever they wanted, the rumor being they were children of the leaders of a drug cartel, Camp Robin Hood. Anyway, here's a letter from listener Mary, who did not attend Camp Robin Hood but had an interaction with them. She went to Camp Four Winds. Here's what she had to say. Camp Four Winds was an all-girls sailing camp, and even though it was the early aughts, Four Winds was still very much stuck in the heydays of 1960s prep/preppy culture. So we sang songs dedicated to pink and green polo shirts, including the classic, "Just Like You Would to Your Izod Shirt, Be True to Four Winds Now." I had no clue what Izod was. Across the lake was Camp Robin Hood. One night, the girls in my bunk got up to some mischief. After our counselors fell asleep, we snuck down to the docks. We stole canoes and quietly paddled toward Camp Robin Hood. It was July, but it was Maine, so it was freezing. I was in the middle of one canoe, a freeloading non-paddler, desperately hoping we wouldn't capsize and drown. At Camp Robin Hood, they had dark green shirts with a jaunty Robin Hood logo embroidered on the chest. They had a practice at the end of the day of leaving them to dry in the docks. We wanted those shirts, and we planned to steal them. But as we were docking, a revolving bright light shone out, and some kind of alarm started blaring. We grabbed as many shirts as we could, and we started panic paddling back, and we made it. When we got back, we shoved the Robin Hood shirts deep into the bottom of our camp trunks. I lived with dread every day afterwards that we would be found out and thrown in jail. But we got away with it. Until, days later, one of our group made a mistake and wore one of the shirts. It was a dead giveaway, especially as the shirts had been reported missing. We got a stern talking to, and we were forced to return the shirts to Camp Robin Hood, but I kept one. I wore it a few times once I got home before I felt too guilty and gave it to Goodwill. So she ended up stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. Good job, Mary. She goes on, in a twist of fate and imbalanced budgets, Camp Four Winds closed the year afterwards. I was sad. Camp Four Winds was old and run down, but also genuinely fun. I promptly forgot how to sail, though I think I could still successfully win a game of jacks if the opportunity arose. So Mary sent in a recording of her singing that one bit of the Camp Four Winds song that I quoted when I entered this courtroom. So we'll close out today with that.
Just like you would to your eyes on shirt, be true to Four Winds now.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.